This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Backbiters in the kiddo hook. Standing all around the door. Backbiters in the kiddo hook. Standing all around the door. And it whispered every day. Hoping I'd go away to stay.
Carol Cox Show, right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Good morning, and welcome to the Carol Cox Show. We're sitting right here in this studio, looking out over the mountains. What a beautiful day. And actually, didn't find any rain. Looked like a little bit up on the Poly, but you should see it. It's spectacular. For those of you back there on the mainland with the cold weather and all, it'll be all right. We'll keep this fire burning over here, and hopefully things will get better for you in about a couple of months. But that's also, it's nice to be back there in the snow and the rain and autumn leaves and all. So, beautiful day. Anyway, hey, I had the occasion, by the urging of the owner, if you guys want good Thai food, not a commercial here, but I will tell you, the Opal Thai restaurant in Haleiwa, you got to try it. Make sure you allow for some time, because everybody wants to go there, and everybody, once they go there, they don't want to leave. Man, the food is that good. And I've eaten a lot of Thai food, but I got to tell you, it's the Opal Thai. The owner is Opal. And you got to really try this. It's in Haleiwa, 66197C Kamehameha Highway. And their phone number over there is 637-7950. They got lunch and all, but it was a unique experience. And my taste buds felt like I had taken vacation from the normal, the regular routine Thai food. And Thai food, where we normally eat, is pretty good. But this one was just exceptional. So anyway, that's a plug for the good food and good vegetarian dishes. Absolutely, you got to try it. Anyway, I started last week talking about Kaka'ako, and it's of interest to me because there's so much going on, and there's so, when I say going on, from the finest particles of dust or sand or silt down there to the upper echelons of government here in Hawaii and corporate business world. Howard Hughes is coming. Ohai acquired buildings in the trade-off and Fisherman's Wharf. By the way, if you had intended to come down and look at the old Fisherman's Wharf restaurant, forget it. Go get you some pictures because it's gone. And that entire area. So things are progressing on a fast track. Kaka'ako will seem to be no more as we know it. And thanks to Neil, and thanks to Caldwell, and thanks to the others who paved the way for big business. And anything that's green basically is gone, is going to go. And I got to tell you, look to the future if you want to see the past in this one, because it's gone. They've obliterated. It's gone. Obliterated is, it's over. And so that brings me to the subject of, and I'm going to do a lot of reading here, and I do apologize, but feel free to call 524-1080. And I want to just share with you how much of a fast track, and some ask, which is a fair question, why should we worry what's going to happen when we were not worried while it was happening? And that means, did you know that the Kaka'ako area, the landfill in that area, that park and many areas in there were actually is landfill, and landfill from batteries, landfill from ash from the incinerators. There were actually two incinerators there at Kaka'ako, and we're going to go in greater details about this, but I, so that I could be a bit more factual and not just talk in loops, I want to share with you a document, and we're going to post it on carolcox.com. It's a common document that if you go to look for it, you'll find it, but I posted it carolcox.com later. And it's the evaluation of remedial alternatives for Kaka'ako Makai District. This document was prepared for the State of Hawaii Community Development Authority. And I don't know about you, but I got to tell you, I think if there were a couple of agencies they need to do away with, is the HCDA. It's, in my opinion, and these are my opinions from my experience, a band of thieves who will do anything for anybody with money, and the hell with the citizens and anyone. That group of people, they're not skilled, even from the leadership. I've watched them. They rubber stamp everything. It's shameful. And I know that Kaka'ako is an exempt area, some portions of it, and so the elevation or the altitude of the buildings can be exceed what is a normal city. But even though the fact that they're allowed to do that doesn't mean they have to do that. So they operate in this mind frame where we can do things that are exceptional to the basic rules, so therefore we'll do them. Just because you are authorized to do them, does it fit? Does it complement what is going on? Does it cripple? Does it take away from the people? Does it take away from the normal users? And that is the problem. And I've watched them, and I'm nervous about any time I read an article or any reference that the HCDA or the Hawaii, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, Board of Land and Natural Resources, when I see those names, and Shipti, I become a little paranoid, honestly. I feel like I'm going to lose something if they're involved. And I feel that we all collectively going to lose something. Because they are, you shake their hands and it's kind of wet and slimy as if you're greeting snails or what have you when they deal with you and they deal with the issues. And they get appointed by the governor and they get, and get approved. But this development down at Kaka'ako, and I hope to convey to you what really, it's not the an opposition to the building, which I wish they wouldn't, but the area is going to be housing residential buildings and what have you. And in this study, I'll share with you that it's not supposed to be for residential. And the reason is the contamination that is in the soil, that's in the water. And yet they're moving along. So I don't know, because if you have a lot of money and you buy the highest one, the penthouse, you may not be bothered by the dirt down below or the contaminants. But anyway, this document was prepared by the Limtiako Consulting Group and Enviro Services and Training Center. So basically, I'll share with you some of the limits of action levels of the contaminants in the soil, and I'm going to just to be as accurate as possible, and I want to make sure that I'm sharing with you. The Limtiako Consulting was retained by the Hawaii Community Development Authority to prepare this evaluation of remedial alternatives, ERA, as a follow-up report to the environmental hazard evaluation and ETC in 2009. That was conducted for portions of the Kaka'ako Makai district in Honolulu. The HERO office also noted that ongoing exposure, quote, of people who use the area on a regular basis and runoff of contaminated soil and into the adjacent harbor are of particular concern and should be addressed as expeditiously as possible, end quote. To comply with the DOH HERO office request, this ERA will use the findings of the EHE to have not been finalized, and the ERA is limited. That's going on. But there, this area is divided into units, the Kaka'ako area, a parcel 4, unit 1. There's unit 2, unit 3, unit 4, unit 7, 5, 6, 7, 8. And if you know of the pumping station, the sewage pumping station, you may have seen it in the news. It's a historic building and what have you. And that's part of this complex. It was built as a result of, in 1898, the sanctioned by the and funded by the Department of the Interior. By the Department of the Interior because of bubonic plague in 1898. Go ahead, caller. You have a comment or question?
Hi, Carol. I just want to suggest when the Howard Hughes Corporation and everybody builds their high-rises, we need that for progress, that the top floor isn't the penthouse anymore, that the top floor has become greenhouses. And we might even make them parks with public access to walk through and enjoy and plant. But that's basically what the roof level should be, greenhouses, so we can retain some green.
Okay, and who will be allowed to use those? Residents or the people, just a common citizen, or who?
Yeah, public property rights, private property rights. They can meld and they just have access. You know, you have easements to walk into an ABC store, make the top floors of all these buildings parks with easements.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, you're welcome. Yeah, that remember, this will become private property when these facilities set up, maybe owned and leased by the state, but still yet the property owners or the business owners will have a right. And in the current climate is we have the people with the mindset that the human beings that find themselves sleeping on the sidewalks and in tents are not human beings. So they'll probably be stripped of every right and anything. So even if that was plausible, I think that the likes of Caldwell and the likes of this city council who votes for any damn thing that's inhumane will do just that. And it's okay. I think the day of reckoning is close by for individuals who simply complete and dehumanize the humans that are down there. Yeah, I know there are many reasons they're there, but they're there, and they're still human beings. And I know that's a liberal approach to some of you, and it's not healthy. It's wanting to suggest we should be social in our government and whatever. And far from it. I'm not suggesting any of that. I'm suggesting that our actions, we seem to be now more reminded and quicker to be inhumane than we are to be humane. And that speaks something about us now as individuals, not the homeless. And so I believe that when you stoop this low, it's your reason, your purpose, that office, these offices are set aside and designed. These are concerns that falls within the purview of the various offices. And when these things are not fixed or managed properly, that speaks to the inability or the incompetence of the government itself, period. I don't care what you think. If the guy got $1 million and went and screwed it off in smoking dope and what have you, that's a reality. Our society presents various problems, and then our mayors and our city councils and our prosecutors and all of those people and governors, they know when they step and take that oath, these are concerns of our country, our city, our county, our state. So anyway, these parcels, let's give some site background. What's going on down there? And I would say that the site description and land area, the project area is currently owned by HCDA and consists of approximately 35 acres of land within the Kaka'ako-Makai district. The land areas being evaluated include Kaka'ako Brownfields Project, units 1 through 8, and the Ala Moana Wastewater Pump Station, as I described, property. These areas encompasses parcels 1, 2, 4, 5, 6, 2, and parcels 2 and 6, and on and on and on. The climate, the main feature is we know that the site and soil geology, and this is a report now. It may sound a little bit of a classroomy or too structured, but I want to leave you with some understandings that drawing a conclusion that do these people really care about sensibility, about good management, or is it once they focus on something to get it done, they just get it done. They don't care about the fallout, the impact, the negative aspects of it. They just do it. That whatever it is, they agree to in the back room. And that's unfortunate because it costs us. It costs us now, in the future, and forever, because we're talking about constituents of concern, contaminants, and we'll list those. Prior to 1913, the southern coastline Honolulu generally followed the present location of Ala Moana Boulevard. Artificial fill was used to expand the coastline seaward starting in 1913. The artificial fill used to create the current property included municipal waste, municipal ash, and then the surface waters and bodies, drinking water wells, and ecological habitats that were impacted. The nearest surface water bodies are Kiwala Basin, located adjacent to the east, and Mamalo Bay, located adjacent and to the south of the site. Review of the underground injection control, UIC, line maps, and the August 26, 1993, Hawaii Groundwater Index summary indicates that the property is located at 0.25. I'm trying to avoid giving you all the heavy details. There are no wells located downgrading of the site, and the land used of the neighboring properties is recreational and commercial industrial. No ecological habitats were identified at the property. However, the adjacent Kiwala Basin and Mamalo Bay support coral reefs and local bird population. Now listen to that, and as we go on, this is a marine environment, and we build a landfill, and we dump everything that's invented and anything that was going to be invented as a waste, dumped it there, brought it in with gasolines and fuels and PCBs and you name it, and fill this area, and you have percolation from rainwater, you have, and that area is leaching and rinsing out into the ocean and the surrounding environment. You know, we talk about sustainability and people being down there fishing for subsistence fishing, and on and on and on. But they're eating out of a cesspool. The hazardous waste, the toxics, the metals of concern, leads, mercury, arsenic, dilution, all of those things, insecticides, are found in the environment in that area. And I'll read you the list of and the findings and the sampling results. So, the area-wide, that's the groundwater. The original southern coastline of the Honolulu generally followed the present location of the Ala Moana Boulevard. A seawall was constructed and artificial fill materials were deposited behind the seawall. The fill material consisted of ash from the burning municipal refuse, unburned refuse, construction debris, household debris, automobile batteries, so that's lead and acid and cadmium and all the other constituents, and other miscellaneous refuse items. The deposited fill material caused the coastline to move south and thereby establish new land for development in the Kaka'ako Makai district. Well, now you know when we talk about Kaka'ako, as they say, it was the coastline before followed the Ala Moana Boulevard. It was right along the edge of that. Anything seaward from Ala Moana Boulevard through Kaka'ako is fill. I don't know if you knew that, but by putting it in there, what is the groundwater? When you see the ocean's level is right there at the beach, then you can assume that the groundwater is not that far, it's rather shallow. So if you've dumped all this material in there, think of a coffee maker. It's just percolating and brewing and rinsing out and leaching out the contaminants and the lead and the mercury into the environment. Hint, hint, that may be one of the contributing factors to the decline in coral around the islands, especially in that area, along with other activities that were occurring. In 1930, the first of two incinerators was built on the southeast portion of Ahui Street. In the mid-1940s, a second of two incinerators was also constructed in the area. From the late 1940s until the 1960s, land area seaward of both incinerators were expanded to the south with south fill material and ash from the incinerators. On October 30, 1997, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency granted DOH funds to proceed with a brownfield study. And basically what a brownfield study is, if you go down there in Kaka'ako, you will see a large paved area. And that is one way of treating. You don't remove the contaminants out of the ground because of the cost. You should be forced to clean it up and should not have been allowed to do it. But the fact is it exists. And so what happens is that this material just lay there, so they put a cap on it of asphalt. And the DOH forwarded the funds to the HCDA to evaluate the extent contamination within the area and proceed with redeveloping the area if possible. Since this time, a number of investigations have been performed within the Kaka'ako Makai District, and certain areas have been developed, including the Kaka'ako Waterfront Park and the Children's Discovery Center. And keep in mind now, the Children's Discovery Center is the incinerator, that building and that stack that you see. So who knows what goes on in there? And to say that they scrubbed it all, these are concerns, the ash always being there. And so what happened? The site investigation revealed that certain portions of the investigation area impacted by various contaminants as a result of fill materials used to create the Kakaako Makai District and form previous commercial industrial land use. As discussed in the EHE, there are certain restrictions currently in place for the Kakaako Makai District, which would generally allow only, and underscore this, only non-residential development. But I don't know specifics as to where they're going to locate these residential areas, but in this study, the land itself is supposed to be only industrial use and not residential because of the concerns and the impacts that these chemicals or nasties that are in the ground now from our recklessness or practices will simply find their way in the human body, tissues, cells, and what have you, or the ocean, or the air, or whatever you pick. And therefore, the EHE specifically identified hazard associated with commercial land use, and this ERA was developed based on the existing hazards associated with non-residential land use. So, in other words, the study was done. HCDA got the money, and I will assure you, somewhere down there, here in obtaining the EPA money, and I don't have the documents, and I will go on a hunt for them, but suggested that to get the money and rehabilitate the land, it would be more, the public will have a greater use and a greater access, because that's one of the elements of getting government juice. You come in and you represent one thing, and the reality is you have a completely different scheme going on, but you say the right things at the right time to the right people. So, records indicate that the Unit 1 was previously divided into three separate use areas. The north portion of Unit 1 contained five metal frame buildings and the one modular building. The remainder of the area was paved. The north portion was used for light maintenance activities and yard space by the City and County of Honolulu and Department of Transportation. This is where they stored all the garbage trucks. This is where they stored so all the radiated materials that would normally come in before they had radiator detectors and people were getting treatments and what have you, and it would find its way in the trash. They would wash their cars and trucks down there. All of that percolated into the ground. And the funny thing is, as contaminated as this area was, do you remember the fish auction that was there? I mean, when I read these notes, this report, thinking, so we had great, quote, quality fish sitting in the middle of a toxic landfill and operating a facility to sell fish around the world. And this was grade A fish, and this was a great market. Who would think of such stupid stuff? But anyway, it happened. Traffic signs and street lighting maintenance section and the Department of Public Works Survey Office and Materials Testing, this area contained transformers that could have been filled with PCBs. Additionally, the traffic sign yard previously contained several underground storage tanks for fueling that had been removed. Two underground water monitoring wells were also observed, indicating that the USTs may have leaked. And then when they extracted these tanks, they did in fact confirm that they had holes in the tanks. So the south portion of the unit was utilized by CNC DPW Refuse Collection Division. The majority of the area was used for parking refuse collection vehicles. However, there was a single modular building with several storage sheds for light maintenance work located on the north portion of this area. the seaward half of the south portion was utilized for employees parking. And again, underground storage tanks, above ground storage tanks that leaked. And in this, records indicate in 1956, from 1956 to 1993, Unit 2 in this Kakaako area was utilized as a city and county base yard. Activities included maintenance and repair of automotive and heavy equipment. So, you know, the old brakes, the asbestos brakes, the old hydraulic fluids and all of that. And I have pictures of the existing facility when it was still used by the city. And you could see the stains, and many stains on the ground, and you could see that was the purpose of documenting it. Since 1965, Unit 4 has been leased by the University of Hawaii, and so that's the JKK Look Laboratory. There's a huge building there, and I've often said that that building could be incorporated in the interim for providing shelter to the homeless who camps out right there on the sidewalk near it. And I know that's socialism. You know how it is. Socialism before humanism. I don't know where we're going with this, but the average human being in the future will be able to tell your standard or status by the diamond necklace you wear around your neck or collar, because this is where we're heading. Kakaako Brownfield Unit 5 has historically served as an office space for the Army and Air Force Exchange System and the State of Hawaii. Previously, investigation noted that Unit 5 is generally upwind and out of limits of the area. So that area, Unit 5. Since 1933, Unit 6 had been utilized as a tuna processing plant by Hawaiian tuna packers. Their operations included fish processing and canning, as well as ice cream or ice creation. Four USTs were removed from the site. One tank stored gasoline and three tanks stored bunker fuel oil for fueling the boilers. In 1989, the buildings that housed those operations were demolished. And if you remember, again, this is a toxic waste dump. This is prior to Brownfield, to the EPA stepping in and saying, well, okay, we'll give you a little money to put some asphalt over here and do a study. Can you imagine looking back, one of the greatest food sources, one of the I would say, the most precious resources that Hawaii State has was its fresh seafood that it exported and relied on people to come here and buy and eat when they were as serving, acting as tourists. Kakaako Brownfield Unit 7 has been utilized as a shipyard by Honolulu Marine Inc. from 1950 until present. Prior to 1950, the area was a part of a tuna processing plant operated on Unit 6. The shipyard activities include shipbuilding, painting, metal, and fiberglass work, repairs, and maintenance. And you can see some of these pictures if you're interested at carolcox.com. And I'm going to take a break for 1 minute, and I'll be right back. Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Had to take a breather there and get some water. And anyway, talking about the Kakaako, feel free to give a call, 524-1080 if you'd like to, or if you just need to do something to stay awake while trying to listen, it's okay. But anyway, again, I say I'll post this at carolcox.com. It's a common document. You can Google it for yourself. And that would be evaluation of remedial alternative for the Kakaako Makai District. And this entire thing does not seem to address any of the issues. If they're going to put, and I don't know where they're going to site the residential areas or facilities, but this document is saying that that is not the use, and it's because of the chemicals and the hazardous materials that are present in the soil and in the water. Additionally, okay, the Ala Moana Wastewater Pump Station, the Bishop Estate originally owned the land known as Aloha Moana, Ala Moana, I'm sorry, the type of Ala Moana Wastewater Pump Station area, and deeded the area to the Hawaiian government on September 9, 1881. As a result of an outbreak of bubonic plague in 1898, the Department of the Interior contracted Rudolph Herring to engineer Honolulu's sanitary sewer system. So, imagine, in 1898, bubonic plague shows up, and it may have occurred a little earlier, but they built this facility, the pump station, now that we were saying it's an historic and it was going to be used for senior citizens and what have you. But that brings me to the other point to support my claims about the sleaziness of this HCDA and its operations. And that is, this process, now, we haven't seen any major modifications or additions or upgrade of the sewer system. And yes, they're making at the pump station at the Ilalo Street, they're making they're doing something there. But the sewer line and the carrying capacity and the piping to the Sand Island plant, there's no major change. So you're going to build, someone said yesterday, there's going to be 27 new buildings, and I don't know that to be factual. But if they just built one and didn't revise or refurbish or add on or make it better, the sewer treatment and the sewer transport, then someone has their head screwed on wrong. But again, this is to get done what the politicians and the people with money want to do, the hand-picked chicklets at HCDA, you know, will do anything for anybody that has power or money. They don't really care. They like the prestige of being in that job, I guess. So, the construction drawings in 1918 indicated that the screen house contained a pit approximately 11 feet by 9 below the finished floor level, which led to the underground storage reservoir located at parcel 43. The wastewater was eventually discharged into the ocean at a depth of 40 feet. So, today you have a mile-long pipe that's supposedly dumped off. But imagine here, just a small 40 feet distance from the shoreline, the sewage was dumped, introduced through this building, through this facility, and voila, popped. So imagine all those beautiful people that came here for tourism and swam in Waikiki. Imagine the current. That's when they say the fish were really big. I wonder why. And really numerous. But again, people were there eating the fish. And as they do now, two additions were later built to support the facility. In 1925, an additional building was constructed to house high-speed electric powered pump and was later demolished in 1979. So, this thing called the Kaka'ako area that they're going to build is absolutely needs to be looked at closer. And, for example, they talk about future use of the area in the study. Long-term development plans for the Kaka'akumakai district have yet to be determined. It is anticipated that non-residential land use will continue in this area. Really? So if this report is saying that, and this is because of the harm that it may be presenting to the humans that would live in the area and frequent the area, they don't want residential. It's not conducive to residential. It's not safe for humans. Plans for interim use of the various areas have generally been identified as commercial in nature. Vehicle parking, general equipment, storage. The exception to this would be Unit 8, which is anticipated to be used as a fishing area for children as part of a tag and release program. Now, this is the kind of language that the trickery, see, to get this federal monies and we're going to do this and we're going to be guided by the light and we're going to do what's right for the people, we're going to do what's right for the environment. That's all BS. Get the money. And then in turn, the health department doesn't administer it. They turn around and give it to the snails there at HCDA, who in turn is at the beckoning call of the likes of Neil Abercrombie. Get it done. On the run. Whatever. I just got big money friends just called me up. I've been talking with them. Get this done. Want to hear nothing. But, Mr. Governor, you know that it can't be used. This report says that no residential area, no residential housing should be placed on this because of the contamination. Oh, to hell with that. These are my friends. Get it done. Something like that. I can't tell you. I mean, I took the liberty of producing that statement and trying to give you an image. But basically, the document speaks for itself. I could save the editorializing. But the reality is, the document, money was spent to determine the difficulties that this thing presented, this land. And so, let's just look at some of the things. And if I was you, I'm going to tell you up front. Any of you that go to the Kaka'ako Park and you take your children, I would avoid that area like the plague. And what they're saying is, and potential receptors, let's say, for the purpose of this ERA, the following potential receptors are identified. Current on-site workers, trespassers, recreational users, i.e. users of Kaka'ako Waterfront Park, and future on-site users, residential land use currently prohibited in Kaka'ako Makai District. Interim land use will be commercial industrial with the exception of Unit 8. Now, I got to go back to Unit 8, and they may not be planning to put any residential housing in this area. But where are they going to put the people that the low-income housing, affordable housing? Is it going to be a blind eye in places, buildings there, to house the people for affordable homes? So, future construction workers. Now, these are people that will be harmed, that this report say will be harmed from this, their receptors, from this the presence of these contaminants and the ash and all the other constituents that's found in the ash and all the other dumping that occurred. Current and future off-site users, recreational users such as park users and fishermen, transient population. Now, you know that it must be of concern. You can draw this conclusion, that there must be some devils in this soil and some serious contamination for them to say that the person that could be impacted is a trespasser. Now, how often will the trespasser come on? One time? Two times? Three times? Let's give you an idea of this fast-track Kaka'ako building and all of this activity down there. And they're telling you up front, here are the people that will be sickened or possibly be impacted negatively by these chemicals that's present in the soil. Current and future ecological receptors, aquatic only, no terrestrial habits anticipated in heavily populated urban areas. So that goes back to the fish, eating the fish, and the people that go down for subsistence fishing. And by the way, when you go down there and you're hiking and walking along, and those huge hills there, take a look at the pipes that are sticking on the top of the hill that's all green. It looks beautiful. But just be reminded, underneath is nothing but hazardous waste and an old landfill. And those pipes are to venting the methane gas and other gases, polyvinyl chloride gases, whatever is generated by the activities of that soup that's brewing down underneath and called the Kakaako Park. Exposure is defined as the contact of an organism with a chemical or physical agent. An exposure pathway is defined as a course of chemical or physical agent takes from a source to expose an organism. So, sediment exposure and pathway. Receptors may be exposed to COC, these are constituents of concern, in sediment as a result of surface runoff during storm events. Sediment may accumulate in the adjacent marine environment and be available for contact with various receptors. Recreational users of the marine environmental swimmers, surfers, fishermen may come into direct contact with the sediment and be exposed through an ingestion and dermal absorption. Let's back up for a moment. You remember I told you, I read a piece where they're going to put the Children's Discovery Center there, and they were going to do some fishing and then teach them how to tag and release. But in this same damn report, they're saying people that would be fishing would be impacted. Now, I know I sound like a loon or just foul mouth, but at some point, when people are stupid enough to spend our tax dollars, get the findings. The findings say that it is a problem, it's problematic, and poses a risk to all of us and the environment. And then we carelessly say to the public in this formal document that, oh, we're going to use it for children and we're going to teach them how to fish. And yet in the same document, three sections later, saying that people that are fishing there will be impacted by the chemicals. I don't know about you, but that scares me. Sorry, caller, we disconnected you on that. Try again. Anyway, recreational users of the marine environment, swimmers and surfers and fishermen, may come in contact with the sediment and expose through an oral ingestion and or dermal absorption. Ecological receptors may live directly in the impacted sediment and may be exposed to COC through feeding within the sediment as a secondary transport mechanism. COC may bioaccumulate in ecological receptors, fish, shellfish, then be ingested by the receptors, or humans, or birds, or what have you. Groundwater exposure. Receptors may be exposed to COC in the groundwater by direct contact or by inhaling volatile COCs, constituents of concerns, emitted from the groundwater to air. The exposure pathway becomes especially significant during the construction activities when the groundwater in the property is exposed, may be pumped out of trenches. So, again, the magnitude and extent of this contamination, it says, numerous investigations in the area identify the presence of contamination in the surface and subsurface soil and groundwater at the site through the collection of environmental samples. This ERA is based on the EHE, and I can give you those acronyms again if you, that utilize the arithmetic mean contaminant concentration of these historical samples collected from each unit and sample matrix. Therefore, The average contaminant concentration for a specific unit in sample matrix was associated with an environmental hazard. The entire unit in matrix was deemed to be associated with that specific hazard. As an example, the average contaminant concentration of lead in the surface soil at units 1-3 of 891 milligrams per kilogram was associated with a direct exposure hazard for commercial industrial land use. See, it's not saying anything about residential. Thus, all the surface soil in the units 1 and 3 was deemed to be associated with a lead direct exposure hazard for commercial industrial land use. Go ahead, caller, with your comments real quick.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I am referring to the Kakaaka development. You're very kind. These people are unconscionable and incorrigible. If you look at the December 5th high-rises versus honky-tonks in Memphis, Tennessee, small-town working-class neighborhood border boards, hyper-gentrification, wealth of new kind of buyer, homes at $40,000 10 years ago are now $600,000, and the short article goes on and on to show how Nashville grows richer at risk losing the touch with its roots, and Hawaii is lost. It is aloha, goodbye, and it's Pono Gate, the rich control, and that is exactly what's going on. Four people, as you know, own property in Kakaaka, the city, the state, Bishop Estate, and Howard Hughes. How did Howard Hughes get there? I was at a city council meeting about a month or two ago, and they had the agenda one on the PowerPoint. Number two was Howard Hughes. I called everybody and tried to find out months ago about when did Howard Hughes acquire that property and what does it have to do with the development now.
Right.
They just had a commercial. It ended the commercial, and I don't mean to expound any more on this, but they ended their commercial with walking distance to the train. Right. Thank you very much, Mr. Cox.
You're welcome. We'll be talking a little bit next hour, so feel free to call back.
Thank you.
Anyway, guys, sound mean-spirited, but at some point, someone amongst us all should become angered and ask the basic questions. Why us? Why do we, it's in your face. Can't we do better? It's no longer what goes on at the voting booth. Why us? Aren't you outraged? I mean, you know, and some of the trickery, you know, they don't call it a landfill. They call it a sanitary landfill. Wastewater treatment plant, not a sewage treatment plant. Going to hook and release the fish. Going to tag and release the fish. Well, how do you tag it? You first got to hook it, right? Unless you're raising it, and where are you going to raise it? In that facility, it didn't say that. So there's something going on, ladies and gentlemen, that we shouldn't accept any of this. And we should ask IGE to put a halt, use an executive order, to do a review. I don't think it's over yet. But when you look at this report and you see the sleaze that's going on behind the scene and the fast tracking, we have to do something, folks. I'll see you in the next hour. Thank you.
For the second half of the Carol Cox Show, right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
comes Mr. Loneliness to stay by my side. I know I won't forget you, no, no, no. Lord knows I've got to try. I feel the water falling. But I can't hold back these tears. I hear the people whispering inside me. They're saying I'm such a fool, yeah. To sit down here and let you worry me. You were never true. But that's all right, baby. I can't hold back these tears.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Okay, good morning again, and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. And in the last hour, I was talking about the Kaka'ako and the contaminants and the Kaka'ako Park and all of those things. And clearly, I'm sure you want to know, what are some of these things that are of concern? And I'm just going to read a little bit. Historically, the general project area has been impacted by waste incineration, landfilling, and commercial industrial operations. Previous investigations conducted with the Kaka'ako Makai District include the collection of soil and groundwater samples for analysis, varying COPC. COPC included various chemical groups, including total petroleum hydrocarbons, TPH, volatile organic compounds, VOCs, semi-volatile organic SVOCs, including, anyway. This is a report that I don't know if the people that got all the money, if they realize what they're buying or what they're going to get. But then I guess if you got a lot of money, you don't worry about cancer and illnesses because you can pay for that and fly off to India and buy a new organ from the poor people over there, you know. But what about us little people who traverse that area to go there as park users before the building and knowing that it's contaminated, and the state health department allows it, and the children sliding down the hill on cardboard and getting the dirt and ingesting it and what have you, and on rainy days walking through there and playing on it and what have you. Someone should show a little shame, but not amongst us, that our government, it's not caring. It has no shame. It's get the job done for the people with the money. That's what this is about. This is good government in Hawaii. Not about freedom from pollution and having people to pollute you and contaminate your food sources and your environment and what have you. You are entitled to be free of these things. But instead, it's not happening that way. And backing up, again, at the risk of triggering some of you out there who think that to advocate for a humane approach and a humane treatment to other human beings is got to be some political BS. No. One human being caring for another human being is the only way things should be done. the politics of it. Yeah, there's Micronesian. Yes, there's many people from all walks of life down there at Kakaako. How is it that the State Department of Health, and I know they don't have anywhere to go, but there are other lands, there are other state lands, there are Hawaiian homelands, that a sensible approach to, or state lands that could be used to house and make a humanitarian effort to house people that have no homes. But instead, they don't have money, they have hardship, they have whatever the reason they're down there, and don't bother me with what your theories are, I don't care, and this would be a conversation going around in circles. But imagine a government, both city, state, and federal. The EPA talks about how it's environmental justice and what have you. And the EPA has knowledge that Kakaako is polluted and contaminated. They know that because they gave the money to study it. So why are they not? They got an environmental justice program, all heavily paid and top heavy. Why aren't they over here moving? But instead, they, I guess because someone has said they're all Micronesian, so let them stay down there in the filth and the pollution and the contaminants. Let them just, they're not human. Apparently that's what the conclusion. But the EPA is just as complicit in this as anybody else. Neil Abercrombie is complicit. Anybody, this guy calls himself Kurt Caldwell from the plantation, is just an insensitive human being. Because he has to task himself, it's an ugly sight and they shouldn't be there, I understand that. Nobody should get anything for free. I understand that. But the reality is they are here. Do something. But we are letting little children lick the dust, play the dust, eat the dust, and I read you this report. That's the greater crime, folks. It's not being homeless and stretching out on the sidewalk and pissing on the sidewalk or whatever. The greater is that people like Cullen Kippen, Kurt Caldwell, Neil Abercrombie, and all of those people who are tasked with taking care of the homeless wouldn't bother to read this report, wouldn't bother to respect this report. But they let people sit down there, and I know I'll lose a lot of friends because that's a socialist act to suggest that we should care about human beings. Well, I say it's always better to try and be concerned with other human beings than to have 1,000 friends. Because this is reality, and these are little children laying and sleeping in the dirt. And the reports tell you they can breathe it, they can eat it, and human beings should not be living there. Go ahead, caller. Thanks for calling. You have a comment or question?
Thank you again for allowing me to call. I don't have anything environmental. I wish I did. I understand the problem, but I cannot speak in terms of statistics, figures. Your concern for, we are a desensitized society, culture. May I please just mention all the documents, articles that relate specifically to what you're saying?
What documents? I mean, I don't. How will we get those? What are they?
No, they're all in the newspapers.
Yeah. Okay. Well, go ahead with a few. I don't know exactly.
Wednesday, February 27th, 2013. PLDC disaster affirms white public interest. Abercrombie's about face on HCDA rewards war chest. Sunday, March 9th, the 14th. Public Land Development Corporation is betrayal of public trust. Lois Gill, 8/3/12. Recent cases show state lousy at land management, August 29, 2013. DHHL wants its documents secret. HCDA represents developers, not the community. DHHL conspicuously absent at convention, etc. So I've got many more here, mm-hmm. but that's sufficient to try to support what you're saying.
Yeah. And the thing is, let me just give you an idea of some of the constituents. This is the reports. Now, I didn't generate these. These are reports that I got out of the state files, Department of Health more specifically. Dichloroethane, 54. 98.3 was the results of the testing results. The limit is 58.3. Right?
Yes.
Bromofluorobenzene, 99.5 is the test results. 72.1 is the limit. Dibromofluoroethane, 90.8. That's the test results. And this is in the just now in the point panic area.
Yeah.
And again, this report goes on to say TPH in units one. It identifies each unit, by the way. TPHO, surface soil, it's present in 1 and 3 units, 2 and 4, and unit 7 and unit 8. So PCBs total, it's in unit 1 and 3. And it naphthalene in unit 1 and 3. So this mercury lead, okay, let's go back here. PCB total is in unit 1 and 3. Antimony, surface soil is in unit 4. Arsenic is in unit 4 and unit 7. Copper, surface, unit 1 and 3, unit 2 and 4, and unit 7. Anyway, so reason I'm reading that, you're probably saying, what good is that? It's too technical. No, this thing is problematic all over this entire unit, and they call it the brownfield unit. Abercrombie sees it as my friend's way to make money. And HDCA, I seriously think we should do away with them, the PLDC and HCDA. They serve no good purpose.
I understand, and I'm not able to comment on your empirical facts substantiated by your research. I'm going to end with this. It's because it's Thursday, April 3rd, 2014. HCDA's ties to condo developers highlighted. And this week, the Senate voted 5-1 to confirm the appointment of Brian Tamamoto, a developed firm Kobayashi Group, to a 9-member. And that's how I'll end. I thank you so very much for what you are providing all of us. And I wish I could add more on the environment. I'm not going to add any more.
Well, it's not just environment. Let's not compartmentalize everything in the environment. It's about human nature. It's about lying and cheating.
Of course it is.
It's about people in government that has a trust and is doing wrong. You don't have to read 1,000 pages. This is simple. They're screwing us blind, period. And that's
exactly right.
And I think that's what they expect, all of us to show up with PhDs and argue with them. And no, we're saying the basic elements. Human beings are being allowed to play in the parks that you know are contaminated. Human beings are being sleeping on the sidewalks in an area that should be ground zero for any contaminants, and you're doing nothing, and you're selling it from under our feet, and we don't have a say in any of it.
Okay, I'm at Radford High School 4 years ago. I'm talking to an engineer, and a friend who was my therapist asked me to do the question for an engineer from Hart. I asked him, what are you going to do with the underground pipes, lines, etc., all the subterranean? And he said to me, we'll deal with that when we get to it.
Yeah, well, that's standard issue because they never get to it.
Well, of course not.
And who is we? I mean, but let's back up. You know, Christmas came early for us voters here. And I will always remember this Christmas. The greatest gift that I've ever received is that people that have been identified and characterized as complacent, non-caring, out of it, not worried about what the government is doing, having no control. We voted out Neil Abercrombie. You get that? My stock in, I mean, brother, and I don't mean to sound like I'm happy that it was Neil. I'm happy for the act.
Yes.
That's what I'm happy about. That so we can do it, and the message to all the other clowns that think that they can take us for granted and keep trudging along, they'll get their medicine too.
I hope so.
You know, and so look at the players, man. So thank you.
Well, I hope E-Gay is possibly the solution. I have faith.
Well, we are the solution, and we just have to get involved and take the same kind of actions. If he acts crazy, then we can get him out, too. It's that simple. We've already demonstrated that there is cohesiveness or some factors that are out there that we may not be able to put our hands on them, but we rise to the occasion or rose to the occasion especially. And I don't think that's a unique action. I think it's... That's what people do. We get sick and tired. We get rid of the, you know.
I pray that you are right.
I don't know if I'm right or wrong, but we got one out, so let's go on that one.
Thank you, Bob.
All right, aloha. Thank you. Go ahead, caller, with your comment or question.
You call them clowns, and they're really criminals, these guys, especially Abercrombie. I'm glad we got rid of him. And I hate to say it, I did vote for him. I thought he would do something. I think we discussed this before, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
How's it been going, bro?
Real good. Can't complain.
Can't complain, okay.
But I am complaining. You see that?
This guy, Iggy, is there any hope in him, you think, or what?
I don't know him from a stone on the sidewalk, but I do know people, and I know that people we can be taken for granted. I think there's some cohesiveness here, and it's new and it's newfound. And I think that Ige will get the same boot if he don't. He may. It depends on. I'm looking at how his cabinet is formed. I'm concerned that he'll keep some of the hangovers from Neil Abercrombie's useless staff collection of appointees. I don't know. Let's give him a couple months to see how he and who he picked. You know, I mean, I was going to wait until January and figure out, look and see who's who, and then we can tell from there. Because if they are conflicted, then that's going to dictate somewhat how they're going to behave as directors and leaders of these various agencies.
Yeah, you're right. Because the first thing that they should really fix is the health department. That mm-hmm. is the biggest boondoggle piece of crap of a state agency that I've had dealings with them, and they're the worst, man.
Mm-hmm.
They either are paid off or they're just incompetent beyond all belief.
Well, let me share something with you and the other listeners out there. I believe now, and I could be wrong. I've been wrong a million times. And I don't know why I keep, but recently last week we talked about the dairy on the Big Island, on Kauai. And that group of people, awesome people, they're fighting and trying to just, with transparency, bring things out so the public could be part of the equation in deciding what goes on, if that is permitted or what mitigations exist. I was able to, after Sunday's show, file a request. And never had this to happen. So if this is the indicator that this is what Ige's administration is going to do, this group of people were trying to get documents for months. They weren't able to under the Abercrombie. I made that request, and within 3 days, the Attorney General deputy called me and said, these documents are made available to you. You can come in Friday. So if that is an example or suggestion of what's to come, then I think we're on the right track.
Well, I hope so, man, because they all need to be swept out of there and get some new ideas and people that are sincere and care about the populace. You know what I mean? The people understand why.
Mm-hmm.
All them kids being tested down there and contamination there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So like committee, sir.
Okay.
I mean, I catch the company. There's a little bit of all that stuff will never be there, you know.
Right.
And this, you know, it builds up there for a while, you know, and then boom, you come down with that, you know, and you're where it's coming from, because it's.
Yeah.
No, when I was young, I would cage in there, and it was all toxic area. Now I can't see it.
Yeah. Well,
I get twitches and whatever.
Right. And anyway, you're breaking up severely there a bit. But no problem, but your location probably. But yeah, there's some look like some good things coming. But that's just could be hopeful, you know. I mean, who knows?
Let's keep our fingers crossed, because everything is like a race with these politicians. You know, I mean, they say one thing and then they throw, you know, snake eyes at you.
Right. Right, and we'll see, but, you know, these policies that are supported and propped up, you know, this sit, lie, spit, piss bill, hey, I'm sorry, but that's just an appeasement for someone that has no sympathy for other human beings. That's all it is. It has nothing to do with anything. And then you're spending more time building bike paths and creating more corrupt and problems with traffic and everything else, and you call yourself a leader. I think that in a short time, we'll see him being voted out. Thanks, Bob. You disappeared, but thanks again. Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Yes, I'm going to suppose EK has already acted crazy. In his acceptance speech, he said he was going to be culturally sensitive and flying towards Hawaii and Hawaiian values. He instead of securing the sale and whatever of the assets of the Hawaii Power Company and securing it for the Hawaiian sovereign, he sold it out to the state of Florida. I think he's going to bring Japanification to this area, and he's going to be at the top of crony nepotism.
Now, are you suggesting that he did this? I mean, how long has he been in office in working days?
He didn't put an injunction on the sale, and it's going out of the state. The people can sold out again. That's all I got to say, thanks.
Okay. Well, I tend not to show favor or be interested in when guys that seem to be in the radio talk to, and I'm not part of that community. I just sit here and talk on the mic. When you call up on the show, especially me, and you say you'll take your answers off air, I don't have any answers, but I would love you to expound on what it is with clarity that you're presenting. I'm not trying to entertain anyone and taking the answers off the air. You can hang on and talk as long as you want to, because you're presenting something that invites all kinds of questions, and so it's just not fair to anyone. So just, if you call up, feel free. We're not in a hurry. If we don't get it said today, the next person can wait next week. That's my attitude. But I think, what is it today, the 7th? Is it fair to assume that he should be doing something or have done something to stop or halt the sale? Or should the legislators have immediately convened a hearing to call in the question, to call these people in? And clearly, I don't believe, given the record of, in my opinion, of the power company, they're here to serve the people, when in fact we had the chance of giving each home or putting in those that wanted it to install solar panels on their homes, and there was rejection and interference and delays and what on the part of the electric company, as I understand it. So anyway, we can first start judging Ige and anticipate what he's going to do. In my opinion, let's see who he appoints, and let's look at their record, those appointees, and look at their records and see what kind of pilikia they have been involved. See who they are, if they work for agencies. I don't know with accuracy, but I was more moved the other day by reading, and I got to check it again, but Brian Schatz's wife has a job with Forest City. Now, the senator plays a role in making sure these people get their, you know, the big developers, and Forest City has issues and concerns with property here and managing federal properties and having access. I'm concerned, and I'll say that out loud, and nothing is wrong with that, maybe ethically. But to know that the Senator Brian Schatz's wife now has a job with Forest City bothers me. And that's not to suggest she's going to do anything wrong, but they don't just hire you for nothing. Good morning, caller. Go ahead with your comments or question.
Yes, sir. A couple of weeks ago, you mentioned wanting to get Connie Mitchell from the IHS onto your show to talk about things. You know, one of the things you mentioned was backpacks not being allowed. People coming in wanting to eat. Have you had any success in reaching her?
No, I've been busy with a couple other things and will be, because this is a time I've had two other calls similar to the ones initially. So I have not had the time to reach out for her because a couple other things hopped on the, but it is in my sights.
Well, I figured you might have trouble getting around to that, so I went down to the women's shelter and left a note for you in you know,
okay,
let her know that you wanted her on her show, how to reach you, and so forth. So that contact has been made. We'll see if she follows up on it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, more important, I went to the Chinatown Neighborhood Board meeting the other night, and lo and behold, Connie Mitchell was one of the speakers scheduled to talk. She did have her 10 minutes. I had my 2 minutes to come up and ask questions, make my comments and statements, and I jumped on her with both feet. I went through a litany of things that I've been storing up to bring up to her or expose to the public, and within my, by the time I reached my second item, she had already fallen out of her seat in a rage, steaming like mad to counter everything I was saying, and I hadn't even gotten halfway through my 2 minutes yet. I addressed the $90 fee that IHS charges. She came on after me and said that fee can be waived and is waived. That was a total lie. She lied through her teeth in her rebuttal. And another, when she did address the backpack issue, she said it was because people were bringing in bed bugs and stealing. She was blaming the people simply coming in there to eat for contaminating the place and being thieves as the reason for making people leave their backpacks outside or just do without food.
Okay.
I also addressed the fact that Abercrombie and the health department had, in cahoots with the IHS, been trying to stop feedings in the parks and so forth around the entire island in order to force everybody through the inadequate doors of IHS. I also addressed the fact that for decades there has been systemic theft of all the really good donated food that is given to IHS. It doesn't reach the plates that it's intended to. It goes somewhere else, and it doesn't go to the women's shelter anywhere else. It's just stolen and has been forever. I volunteered in the kitchen to witness it myself. So without all that donated food, they run out of food sometimes during feedings.
Well, tomorrow I will reach out to her again and ask that or the administrators leave a message or something. And
Well, I don't expect her to even recognize it because you're not KHVH where they...
No, I'm not. I'm
softball questions, you know.
And I appreciate you for I owe you dearly for making that distinguishment because it is important.
Well, I'll tell you
that people know that
I am really pissed off at IHS and so forth. I started off my statement by saying IHS has to do some good things, otherwise they're not going to have the money and contracts coming in.
Right.
But overall, they're part of the problem and the homeless and so forth.
Right. Yep. Okay. You know, well, go ahead.
They get taxpayer money.
Right.
To feed people, and those meals are all supposed to be square meals, and instead they run out of food half the time. Well, not half the time, but they have run out of food, so they can't even feed the people that come in there. And very often the food is just terrible, like macaroni slop or something. So they're ripping off the taxpayer. And on and on. It's just crazy.
Well, let's do this. Listen in, and I will definitely, tomorrow, I'm going to be with some free time and to reach out, or if nothing else, go down there personally and see. But thank you.
I'm going to go on your site and email you some information and so forth, so that when you do get hold of her, if you do, mm-hmm. you're armed with a lot of stuff that you can just put in her face.
Okay.
But don't expect to talk to her, because she lied through her teeth to the board members at that neighborhood board meeting. Oh. And to the camera that's going to be on Olelo showing the whole meeting in a month.
Okay. Well, thank you. And we'll make contact. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it. Bye.
All right, bye. This gives a segue into another portion of what I was going to talk about. We talk about power, war on poverty, and war on drugs, or war on anything. And I've been doing some interviews of people who actually work in these social programs. And if the caller would just hold for 1 minute, and these social programs, and I want to convey to you, we stigmatize the people that are receiving this money, or these, as some of you call, handouts or something for nothing. But there's a certain percentage of the people who just honestly need it because of circumstance in life, and unfair for a passerby to just flippant with their comments, not knowing. But getting past that, I've done some interviews, and I want to share with you just the inner workings of these programs that are war on, declared a portion of the war on poverty, as an example. And let's go to Chicago, Gary, Indiana, where I've been doing some interviewing. And here's how it goes. You, in turn, have a head of an office who's politically motivated. The government allocates money. That person then hires people that he wants to hire or keep. And then in turn, they get a salary, and it's a full year job. But of the 12 months, they have to take 2 months' month salary and give it to that person who is in the position of authority. And in turn, so they only get to keep 10 months of salary, but they have to give the other 2 months to the political entity for the body. So that's one. And the intent was to make better these people's lives and to give them more salary. And then you take, for example, I'll hold that thought, and hopefully the caller is on in the same vein. Good morning, Carl. Go ahead with your comment and question.
Hi, Carol. I can emphasize with the last caller. Not the IHS, but the next steps there. And you know what gets to me is these programs. It seems like a money making programs for some people. I like to go back to that. What do you call the housing first thing? What a scam! The public doesn't realize. They think they're going to get free housing. They're not going to get free housing. They're going to take 30% of that for the rent. Well, guess what? The idea of the housing is to get you out of poverty, but that's just going to put you in poverty too. Mm-hmm. Now you're going to have a place to live, but. They can't understand that that's their big problem. They're poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So they need that extra money to live, to buy food and whatnot. Mm-hmm. I can testify about the food and the next step. Most of it is very lousy, not very nutritious stuff. Lots of white rice. Stews over rice and that kind of stuff. Also, poisonous food. There's many times that would happen. People would get they would get food poisoning, and then because of those out of date food, just like you found out at the vet's place, And that's what they do. They try and they get the lousiest stuff. Like you're not part of us. You're just kind of homeless people.
No, you're not human.
Well, right.
We're human. See, we got jobs, and my uncle is somebody, and my uncle got me a job because if he didn't get my job for me, I wouldn't have anything. I'd be like you in most of these cases. They couldn't plait their hair or braid their hair. You understand? And we talk about, we're fearful of creating a social community or an economy. But the reality is, that's what this state is, a social government. Jobs. What are we producing? Paperwork, and you can't even trust a single
doctor. Well, yeah. You know what's funny is that Jason Sprill, he got demoted from his coordinator job, the shelter, and now he's in charge of the employment program. And I was hearing a while back, and he says, well, you know, we're giving him jobs, you know, and we'll clean up the parks and that kind of stuff. And I asked him, hey, listen, come on.
Yeah.
How many hours of the job? And what's the pay? He says, well, they get $10 an hour.
Yeah,
and they're working 20 hours a week. And, and they're expected to find housing on that.
Yeah.
And to be out of poverty.
Yeah.
They're still in poverty.
Yeah. Well, anyway, on that, I don't want to stray so far because I have wanted to share with. But you, if you heard me prior to your calling, I was talking about this so-called war on poverty, and the idea is just convey piece by piece as I go along. But why aren't these things working? And what are some of the other things that are occurring that when we see a person in the line? For example, I had it explained to me by someone who worked for the government agency in these programs, say that, you know, we all have a complaint when we see someone standing there buying a steak, a fancy steak, or buying lobster with an EDB card, right?
Yeah, right.
And I've heard people express themselves and go, how horrible. We're giving them money, and they're spending it on lobsters. Now, on face value, that is horrible, right? But the person should be able to eat what he wants to eat, but it's not intended. So what I learned was that on many occasions when you see a person buying with EBD or food stamps on occasion, the investigators or the caseworker who assign you would frequently give you a shopping list, right?
Right.
And you would end up going and using your food stamps to buy food for the investigators or your caseworker. This was a habitual problem, and this was found in Gary, Indiana. Now, I've interviewed others. So, you know, this is why anybody wants something for nothing is not going to get my vote anyway. But on the other hand, we have to be fair, so we throw a little money. Well, take, for example, this gentleman called Mayor Kurt Caldwell. Millions of dollars diverted to their friends, right?
Right.
And in turn, he gets $2 million back, and HUD stand there, who is the regulator, and says, oh, it's okay. We'll give it back to him. You know, he could use it for whatever he wants to. Well, then why did you spend months on end having him to write it up and justify him getting the money, and then you turn around and say, well, he's been caught stealing, so what we'll do is just let him pay back, but only pay back $2,900,000. You see, so when we drive by, us drive by people who drive by and see the people on the sidewalk or see them in the store at Safeway buying food or groceries and or see the person working at the facility who's now employed and got a job, and then that person has to go and get on food stamp too to supplement their salary, that this war on poverty brought a job to the community, when in fact the guy that runs the agency is stealing.
Oh, they're making out like robbers, you know.
So in case of Gary, Indiana, if you had 300 and some workers, and you required each of those 300 workers to give you 2 months of their salary, who are they going to report it to? The guy here, Chandler in HUD, the Inspector General. You see, the problem is what I'm finding out in my interviews. The problem is the failure is because the system is designed to fail. There's no oversight. They get the money. They shave it off the top here. Portion stops here. Portion stops there. And what gets to the recipient, the intended person, they still have to do things that they don't get to enjoy that. And so this is repeating itself. Now, it repeats itself. I've talked to others in other states that work there. Similar and parallel actions. So imagine the people here needing subsistence, needing support. What if I would love to hear some of the stories here. What are they experiencing?
Can I tell you, my dear wife, you remember her, she's in this care home in Kaneohe. And, you know, there again, I have to bring her fresh fruits and vegetables. They give her a big slab of rice with some gravy and some meat, or like these little, you know, TV dinners that are not really great either, and things like that for her. And I keep on saying, you guys have to be feeding her better food. They take her whole Social Security check. She's supposed to get $50 a month for allowance
right.
out of that. For the first year, she only got $30. They stole 20 of that every month, mm-hmm. you know. Here's where I found a scam of this thing. They call it Nightingale Case Management. They have a contract with the state of Hawaii. They get it like around $3,000 a month per patient, you know, in these care homes, you know, for managing. All they do is they bring a nurse to check on the care patients about twice a month and ask them a few questions, and they're gone. And and these care homes, they're not getting paid a whole lot,
yeah.
And so they have to kind of cut on costs. You know, it's terrible. And I've gone to the disability rights center, and you know what? This they have a lawyer that specializes in the care homes, and this guy just needs.
Yeah, I lost you there. I'm sorry I lost him there. Anyway, you can call back, Dave, if you'd like to. But again, what I'm finding in these things, trying to explain and get some idea, because the government is not going to... They're eager to say, I've allocated... The president says, I've allocated X million dollars for to assist the people to supplement their income or supplement the food stamp program or whatever. And on the right-hand side of the aisle, you're giving these people this and that, and you're creating a socialism and what have you. And the reality is, what you're doing is that you're taking money, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, and you're handing it off to that administration, and then they are diverting and misusing, and then a portion finds its way to the intended purpose. And then there's some filter feeder there stealing from the people. So maybe this is what is really going on. And then you have an inspector general who does nothing. So I think the system is designed to fail, because I think more than likely these programs, whether it's war on drugs, you get $5 million infused in your program. This is what the police departments do. They start looking at this as overtime, their opportunity to make overtime, to go out and buy new gadgets, to buy a new radio system, and all of that. And then when you look back to see what really went into the efforts of the war on drugs, and any police officer that's going to be sincere and honest about it will admit to that, because I, as a law enforcement person, watched it. And so this thing, we need better policing of these administrators who get federal monies and then in turn drop the ball and divert or get pass-through money that's intended for these efforts to combat hunger and what have you. So there's a lot of theft built in government. And as Ronald Reagan said, the trickle-down effect. Well, yeah, it's trickling down, right down to the level of the office in which these people are working, that are hired by this program. And in one case, in one instance, the administrator, who's politically motivated, would hire and incorporate business people to come in and threaten the worker or workers that if they didn't give their donation or give their 2 months salary to the person who hired them, then they would be fired. And in some instances, they refused to give the money and they were fired, but the administrator says, well, I did this because we're going to take a different approach in the management of these areas, but nothing ever changed. And when you file a complaint, one instance, I was told that the accused government official had the occasion to read depositions, which is when someone is deposed. And in there, these people told the story about how they were required to give 2 months of their salary in this program. And that how people were, investigators and case managers, were demanding of the recipients to take their food stamps and go buy steak, lobster, and other things, and have an entire grocery list. But nothing would happen. And so the system, the federal government gives the money, its hands clean. They turn around and says, we're feeding those people. We're taking care of the projects. We're taking care of the program. But in reality, nothing's taking care of anything. And so we're creating this entity that steals from people and steal from you and I, the taxpayer. Now, I don't think that that go very far with some of your listeners in thinking that. But I'm just trying to tell you what I'm finding out. And because I'm curious, you know, how can you for years throw so much money at people? And then you still, things are worsening. It's getting worse and worse. And then you can get, take for example with this Abercrombie, talking a perfect example, we don't have to go to Gary, Indiana. There was Ron Hahn who heads the veterans. What did he do? He got a nice salary. He gets his retirement, I guess, and he calls himself Colonel and others, you know. But what does he do? I mean, he sat in and listened to the fact that rotten food, or expel or spoiled food, or expired food, and other activities were given to female veterans. No outrage. Colin Kippen, no outrage. The Veteran Administration, no outrage. And so their whole purpose, I think they had some big powwow, big meeting in the last week at the convention center regarding homelessness. So how many meetings do they need, and how many conventions do they need, and how many gatherings, and how much did they pay to rent that facility to sit there and regurgitate the same crap? Because they're wiser and smarter, but they're not going to do any more work than they have. So there's something wrong here, big time, in a fashion that when we ask, what's IGE going to do? I would say, let's not ask what IGE is going to do. Let's ask those that have been in office, what have they done and why did they allow? All of our legislators should be held accountable for this situation with the homelessness. I believe, in my little thought that I give to this, I believe that when you step back, there's Suzanne Chan Oakland. And she's been involved in it, and God bless her soul, she's a kind person and all. But, I mean, to what degree do we see this thing deteriorate and the increased population of homelessness? And we going back to the same process, meetings and naming people, and Colin Kiffin, $85,000 or $90,000 salary, and his travel and all. How many people could you have fed and done without the BS that he spread? How many people? Neil Abercrombie went to the YWCA facility there, and when they had shrimp on the barbie and fancy drinks and all, because of the veterans program with homelessness and all, and got their press release and got all the glory in the press, and what did he do? Nothing. Nothing. And so a lot of veterans go to the IHS. We're not trying to impugn the integrity of the IHS and the, when people call and give this information. But I ask the basic questions is, why are we seeing it get worse when we have people in power and in place with specific purpose and being paid to manage these issues? Why is it getting worse? If you took your car to a repairman, and every time you drive down the road, it's worse than what it was that you paid him, you'd get rid of him. Or you go find a new, or you want your money back and start over again. Same thing here. Our legislators have failed us, and Neil Abercrombie should be the first of many people getting kicked out of government and tell them we don't need him, we don't trust him, and we need to do something, because it's getting ugly. And back to Kaka'ako, it's one thing to see children and human beings living on the streets. It's another thing when I read this report and I've the evaluation remedial alternatives for Kaka'ako, Mackay District, and you learn that the health department knows that people shouldn't even be in the park playing around in the area. It's ground zero. And no, the debate is, well, they can't urinate on the sidewalk and they can't sleep and they can't lay on the sidewalk and can't stretch out, and yet we're subjecting these people to environmental concerns and contaminants that is just completely off the scale. So I don't know. As an earlier caller said, don't know about the environmental aspect of this. It's not the environmental aspect is just a simple example of giving us a peek through the window to see how broken and badly broken. There are no values, no concerns, and so again, this is our government. You take the medical waste facility, the medical study, the Burns Medical Center. This document reveals that the Burns Medical Center had high contaminants in it, in the ground there. So their solution was not to dig it up, but to bury it under the building. And so as we talk, underneath the Burns Cancer Research Center is contamination. Put there earlier and entombed there now by the state. So anyway, we'll talk to you next week and hope you enjoyed it and see you. It'll be at carolcox.com. You can listen to the podcast. Thank you.
Are my babies coming home tomorrow? Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news? Babies coming home tomorrow. Ain't that news? Man, ain't that news? I got a letter just the other day telling me that she was on her way and she wanted me to meet her at the station. Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news? In the letter, she told me she still loved me. Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news? In the letter, she told me she loved me. Ain't that news? Man, ain't that news? She said she's sorry that she left. Found out she don't want nobody else. Said she wants me all to herself. Ain't that good news? Man, ain't that news? Ain't that news? Ain't that good news? Man, I know that's good news. Oh, my baby's coming.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.